wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Healthy Tuesday, Sarah. It's nice to see you.
Nice to see you too. What's on your mind today?
Well, I was listening to my introduction and I was thinking that the piece of me that should be in there every week is reluctant therapist. I know we say it often because there are times when I feel really proud of my profession and happy to be a part of it. And there's other times that I want to pull a blanket over my head or run away or change my licensure because some things that happen in my profession are horrifying. And so just in the last couple weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, I've been re-in contact with a friend that has been in my life for 30 something years. And over the course of the time that I've known him, he's, you know, had struggles with mental health issues that started off pretty, what we would consider in the business, situational things that had happened that had caused stress or transitions that had caused feelings of grief, you know, things that are definitely workable, that should be addressed, that can be healed, or at least the symptoms diminish through good talk therapy and good support. But over the course of, I'd say, the last 20-something years, the mental health care he's received has been debilitating and consistently has set him backwards in his life, which should have started off as kind of a routine, get some good talk therapy, get some good support, you know, change some habits, you know, get back up on your feet, careen down a path of different medications, changing medications, adding medications, different therapists, bumped out of therapist's office, bumped out of insurance, bumped out of clinical help, nothing consistent. And it's been a nightmare. And I've watched my friend disappear. I've watched his mental health continue to erode and then get better and then erode. I've seen the frustrations of trying to access care that is actually consistent and really helpful, to find a clinician that really understood the holistic piece of his story, that worked on something deeper than just the symptoms he brought in the room. It's taken all of my professional capacity to not wanting to rush in and intervene along the way, but wouldn't be appropriate or my place to do that. But I have felt myself silently screaming into my pillow when I've heard about the not care he's received and how heartbreaking it is to have him kind of reemerge over the last couple of weeks, because he's been kind of radio silent for a few years. And he reemerged in this great place and felt really stable and was feeling really good. But again, those medications were not longstanding. It was more temporary. It kind of helped with the symptoms, but the underwriting issues still are not addressed. And you can hear the frustration in my voice. I'm trying not to be unprofessional. I'm trying to maintain a level of courtesy to all of my fellow helping professionals who do our best and are mostly overworked, especially if you're working in clinics where there's so many people that you're seeing and so few hours in the day. I understand all of that. But there is something about dealing with mental health in this culture, in this society. The more we adopt and try to connect to the medical model, the more we try to make mental health about our physical well-being, a biological issue, the more we have the potential for creating harm for the people coming to seek help. Long story short, in my experience of doing this work for 25 years, too often clinicians try to heal something that needs a tender touch with an anvil. That instead of coming in and looking at the most obvious reasons why someone is suffering and try to help to shore them up and deal with them. For example, the most common things that bring someone into counseling are situational. They've lost a job. They're having trouble in their relationship. It's you know, a developmental issue where they're going through midlife or going through menopause, or they have a child that's graduating from high school, or it's transitional where they've, you know, changing jobs or moving to another place. All of those situations, financial reasons, grief, the loss, a death of someone, all of those things are common experiences for the human, for all humans throughout our lives. We're going to go through those, and we go through them more gracefully at some times in our lives than others. And the times in our life when we're not able to gracefully go through situational, transitional, or developmental issues, or to move through grief, it's a great time to reach out and have a clinician to go to support you as you work through that process, as you go through the grieving, as you find your feet underneath you again. But over the last 30 years, 40 years, we've become so accustomed to managed care dictating our mental health care that our first line of defense across the board tends to be, let's throw a medication at whatever comes in the door because we don't want anyone to feel anxious or depressed. And then we'll think about some sort of therapy later. And quite often when people get a bit stabilized with a medication, they don't follow up with therapy. Or if they're getting their prescription from their MD, which are where most of prescriptions are written from, not from psychiatrists, not from licensed clinicians, but from MDs who don't really have a background in mental health care unless they seek it out. Once those prescriptions are written, there's really no follow-up. And so for 25 years and for over 10 years of doing this work on the air, I find myself with the same mantra. Mental health care can either be liberating when we find the right person to guide us through our transitional or situational issue, or it can be debilitating if we put ourselves in the hand of a clinician who doesn't really know how to help, but has a lot of tools at their disposal that they throw at their clients. You know, at the bottom line, at the foundation of counseling, it is an art. It's called the art of psychotherapy. It's not called the science of psychotherapy. It's called the art of psychotherapy. It's called the art of communication because it takes more than just tools to know how to connect with someone who is suffering or struggling. It takes insight. It takes compassion. It takes an understanding of the systems that impact and surround the individual who's coming in and seeking help. If we only look at the symptoms, if we only listen to someone describing what they're feeling in the moment, we are only getting a tiny, tiny snapshot. That to really help people, we have to be able to not only hear them for their symptoms and their suffering, but also understand what are all of the things external to this person that are putting pressure on them, that are causing them to struggle in a way that is untenable. It can be climate. It can be the political world. It can be economics. It can be the pandemic. There are a lot of things external from our human body, from our biology, that are stressing our systems and causing us to have mental health issues. So I really wanted to talk about how to access appropriate mental health care. Where can we go to get help? Because there are a lot of people suffering right now for many reasons who've never had to seek out mental health care before, who are feeling symptomatic depression, anxiety, loneliness that they never really experienced prior to the pandemic or the quarantine or climate catastrophes. And I want to talk about how you can get care that will be liberating and shore you up and help you feel stronger and not find yourself going down a slippery slope path that ends up taking away years of your life as you get deeper into the system. So I've invited James Statler, who is the Executive Director of Community Counseling Center here in San Luis Obispo County, to be my guest today to talk about what they offer at Community Counseling Center, but also his understanding of how we can access appropriate care, what that looks like, and what's happening currently with telehealth and our changes in how we provide mental health care. So yes, I am fired up. I feel frustrated, but that's okay because as long as we can talk it out, maybe we can come to some resolve and calm down a bit. So I'm glad you're here today. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And although we're not opening the phone lines and taking calls as usual, you can still send us an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or follow us on Facebook or Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. You can send us messages there. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast the show. And any way you find your podcast, look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and then our shows will be uploaded for your convenience. And if you leave a review, it helps other people to find the show. So as always, I'm excited to see where the conversation goes today. Thank you for tuning in. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back to start our conversation. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Welcome to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and welcome to my guest, James Statler, Executive Director of Community Counseling Center. Nice to see you.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Yeah, thanks for having me back. That was a rousing and provocative opening there, and I look forward to continuing the conversation with you.
Well, I'm glad to see that you didn't turn off your camera and run away when I started off.
Not quite yet. And then to quote one of your past students, thank you. You know, you do radiate brilliance and insight and knowledge. So let me add to that conversation however I can and also talk about the Community Counseling Center.
Excellent. And I did want to add that although we aren't opening the phone lines, you can call in with a comment or question and Sarah will be happy to pass it along to me. So our number is 805-549-8855 if you'd like to participate. All right, so James, before we jump into Community Counseling Center and kind of the world of mental health as it is right now, I don't think people know that you aren't a clinician by trade, that you actually started off your life's career as a history teacher, and we're both fellow gauchos from UCSB, so go gauchos. So how did a history teacher find his way into the world of public health and particularly mental health? What's your journey?
Yeah, the journey. Well, obviously, I've always loved the humanities and history itself. I mean, looking at culture and change over time. I think as I had a chance to be, a lecturer, a teacher in the classroom, my goal was to teach at the collegiate level. And, I got my master's in history from UC Santa Cruz in American history and had the privilege of teaching at Cuesta College here in San Luis Obispo County for a few years. But I think what I really found was, history is the backdrop of my life, what I'm all about, change over time. But I kind of want to make that change happen outside of the classroom. And there's passion projects that are out there for me that lie in the world of youth development and leadership and mental health. And, I found more of a home for that outside of the classroom, although I would say historical consciousness and being a part of a movement is something I'm still all about.
So the youth development piece I can understand as a teacher, but what was your first step out of the classroom? Where did you start doing your work?
Well, if I went back to the first, like the seedling or the sprouts of that, I would say it started with, babysitting as a teenager or, doing childcare in my neighborhood and being entrusted to do that by local neighbors. So that was important and formative. I enjoyed it. After I got my undergrad degree in history from UCSB, I came back to San Luis Obispo County and started working for the Boys and Girls Club in Oceano and started running an after-school program at Grover Beach Elementary. And I think that really opened my eyes to this whole level of how you can change the trajectory of somebody's life and their development. and that we need mentors and we need leaders and we need fundraisers and we need community builders and this whole network of interdependence to have somebody thrive, especially somebody who may have extra barriers. So I fell in love with that work, but also continued on my educational journey. After a few years at the Boys and Girls Club, I still wanted to have that teaching experience or pursue the dream of being, you know, a history professor, and went to Santa Cruz and was there from 2004 to 2006 and came back and hopped right into the classroom, which was extremely challenging and also great because it's a great place to flesh out what you really know and what you really stand for. In the process of teaching, I was able to get a position with what was the EOC at that time, but is now the Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo County in their Health and Prevention Division. And I got the opportunity to be the program manager of this great project called Lifebound Leadership. It was mm-hmm. for teenagers, had a gang prevention strategy, a teen pregnancy prevention strategy, and also these leadership classes that had a cultural lens. We were looking to bring in a lot of Latino leaders in collaboration with a group called Visión Unida. And, you know, I kind of fell in love with all of a sudden service learning projects and environmental stewardship and social entrepreneurship and empowering young people, you know, to shape tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And along the way, I realized that I was extremely afraid of leadership and thought it was something I could never do. And over the course of doing that work with our youth, realized it's actually something that's, you know, within me to carry out and could be my own trade craft to hone and develop. So that was a blessing in disguise because it sort of propelled me to my own maturation of, well, what about the opportunity to be an executive director of a nonprofit? And what would that mean?
And isn't it interesting how, you know, we tell our children from a young age or our kids as they're growing up, you know, think about where you want to go to college and what you're going to major in and what you want to do with your life. And yet we know as adults that we don't know because we continue to develop and change and grow post-graduation, post-master's degree, getting married, having children. Like, you found your way to this gift of leadership pretty far, you know, out of your high school years when you were choosing your major.
Oh, it's completely true. You do. Yeah, the path is always not straight, right? But, you know, sort of those signs and those symbols are there pretty early. I mentioned, you know, actually in high school, I took part in this program called Tiny Tigers. It's a preschool program through the high school, right? And at the time, I was dealing with my own, you know, mental health crisis, depression, you know, eating disorder, body image. And working with our youth was sort of the chance to just like take the mirror off of yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And get back to giving and nurturing. So that was, again, working with young people, working with the community was the way I healed through my own mental health and then got to a place where I could share that story and self-reflect and be able to step into that clinical space with some lived experience.
And so great that you share that, because that's kind of the essence of my thesis today, is that there's a lot of roads to Rome to healing. And if you have a teenager like yourself who is struggling with, you know, depression and body image issues, which are considered a normative discontent, and I don't think that people realize that, but in the professional world, the clinical world, when a young person comes in and they have self-loathing and depression and body image issues, it's so common in our culture, we consider it a normative discontent. And so the healing for that is what you talk about, is getting out of our own head, getting the teenager out of the mirror and into service. I mean, that's a great example of healing with a soft touch instead of using an anvil.
Great point. Absolutely. And I mean, not to throw around quotes, but, you know, I was just looking at some of the greats, right? I mean, we look at client-centered, person-centered approaches. We think about Carl Rogers and just this quote that, you know, the good life is a process. It's not this state of being. It's about a direction, not a destination. Absolutely. And, you know, when you start looking for destinations, we lose our direction. And yet the direction was there for me in working with young people, wanting to educate, wanting to do my own healing, wanting to be an artist. You know, my songwriting and my music, although it's an avocation and a hobby, has always, you know, been in the background sort of as my dream. And to find out that I can still be, you know, a musician in my own world, but also flower into an adult, right? Somebody who can run an organization and motivate, inspire, and raise resources.
And so let's talk about the organization Community Counseling Center that you're the executive director of, because I think people would assume that the executive director of a community counseling clinic would be a clinician. But really, it takes leadership, and you've been there 10 years, so clearly your leadership has done great things for this organization.
Well, it's been a great training ground for me, that's for sure, and a place that I could flower. I know over the agency's 52 years in existence, we were founded in 1968, there have been several clinicians that have been the executive director and have done a great job. I think what was great is I kind of knew the community part when I came into the job. I may not have known the counseling and the psychotherapy and the clinical world yet, but I brought that element of, yeah, I want to rebuild the community part of this agency, or find that golden thread I can pull on that part of the community. And that's where, I mean, I went right back to the origins of the history, right? Mm-hmm. We were founded in 1968, which is obviously a huge cultural moment for so many reasons, you know, in the United States, but globally. And that we were founded, you know, really as a result of how we could treat Vietnam veterans returning with shell shock. There was nobody who could do, you know, clinical counseling for low-income, uninsured people in the community, among which a lot of vets were returning. And that, you know, we had the Ministerial Alliance locally, this group of pastors that were doing, you know, pastoral counseling to fill this void. But the issues became too acute for them when 1968 came around, and there was this call for, you know, an agency to come together that had clinical wherewithal and resources that could treat these issues. So I fell in love with the history and what could be done to tell that story more. I'd always felt like, gosh, this is a best kept secret. How do we get this narrative to be a household narrative?
If you're just tuning in, my guest is James Stotler. He's the executive director of Community Counseling Center, San Luis Obispo County. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. And so, James, let's talk about, and I didn't know that origin story, which is fascinating because, you know, we tend to think that things just emerge out of, you know, nowhere, but there's always something that drives, there's a need in the community that drives things, agencies from starting. So I love that history. So let's talk about the 10 years that you've been there. What kind of changes have you seen, and where are you now in serving this latest crisis?
Right. Well, we made an effort to expand and to scope up and to scale up. We had always been really based in the city of San Luis Obispo, where our headquarters was located. But there always been a desire to get that beam to shine out across the county and really through the Central Coast if we could. And we're still working on that vision to this day. So when I first started out, we were seeing around 400 or 500 clients a year, primarily in San Luis Obispo through our sliding scale core program, which is provided by complete all volunteers, clinicians. As I was sort of observing our opportunity to grow and have a greater impact, you know, we looked around and went, gosh, a lot of our clients have Medi-Cal SenCal insurance. And sure enough, you know, the Affordable Care Act isn't too far away. So, you know, what about a way that we could start to see clients through their Medi-Cal SenCal insurance? So we have built a large program in collaboration with the Holman Group. We've got over 20 providers on that panel now, but that added, you know, over 500 new clients a year to our program. We also looked again at how could we go more upstream, preventative care? How could we help school districts that didn't have a counselor at a school site fill those gaps? So we went out and won an award. We're awarded contracts with the Tascadero Unified School District, and that, you know, mushroomed into having a contract at least with all districts in the county at some point. So we were able to break into the K-12 world, which added another 500, 600 clients. So, you know, by 2018, we were seeing 2,000 clients a year compared to 400 or 500 in 2010. And there's been other ways that we've looked at to innovate and grow. But that was sort of that first phase prior to COVID in terms of how we responded. And I'm also really brought back to when you had me on about 2 years ago. I think I was on talking about our 50th anniversary because we completed a golden anniversary capital campaign to purchase our own building and facility downtown San Luis Obispo, which we did. And we also had the resources to invest in our electronic health record system, which would turn out to be invaluable with COVID-19 because we were able to pivot into that telehealth, fully secure HIPAA system through that mechanism. So there you are at the doorstep of COVID.
And so how have you incorporated telehealth? Because I don't know, you know, everyone has gone online so quickly, and right. care providers are using telemental health and doctors are using telehealth, but I don't know if the general population is really comfortable still. So can you talk a little bit about the history of the tele, since you're a history teacher, I'm going to keep going back to history with you. What is the history of the telemental health and how is that transition working for clients?
Great. Yes. Put me in that historical timeline world. I'm comfortable there. Well, as I was looking back on this, you know, in the late 90s and early 2000s, you know, a lot of the research literature does start to pop up about telephonic counseling as well as video conferencing psychotherapy because the technology is starting to break out. And the idea was really telemedicine, right? Doctors and psychiatrists were looking to use this medium to reach rural areas or remote areas, clients that you couldn't get to. So it was really specific, I think, to doctors, really, from 2000 to 2005-ish. And by 2005, you know, you start to see more of the mental health world breaking in to say, well, psychologists could use this, too, to reach remote areas. Or maybe there are certain clients that have, you know, medical issues that might benefit from this. And from that, you know, there was a big pause about, well, how does it really compare to in-person therapy, right? We talk about the therapeutic alliance, which is so key in what you talked about, which is having that soft touch or the attunement to know where to pull back, where to push, where to nudge, where to offer, you know, where to offer something for food for thought. And, you know, from there, we start to get into 2010, 2015, where now the technology is really breaking out, right? We can actually do this virtual streaming fairly easily over these mechanisms. And you're going to start to see in certain areas where we have psychotherapists and psychologists who are using telehealth, but they're taking it from telemedicine. The terminology actually changes, right, in the field, in the literature. It's not telemedicine, it's telehealth, which can include telepsychotherapeutic care. And as the research starts to look at things, it starts to go, well, actually, clients and clinicians are reporting pretty good levels of satisfaction and people are benefiting from the medium, but we aren't sure about, you know, presence and focus. And actually, clinicians are the ones that had the greatest doubts about their attitudes and beliefs about whether the mechanism, you know, teletherapy was working. But here we are now where we kind of, with COVID-19, threw out the whole discussion about what's on par with what and said, you know, we need to deliver immediate needs for folks, right? And we've seen insurance companies roll back what they consider to be billable through their programs and opening of these doors. And, you know, providers have rushed in and community counseling center has certainly rushed in. But you do have to do it with some mindfulness about what platform you're using and is it fully secure? And, you know, what kind of new skills have to be brought to the table to connect and attune and have presence over these technological mediums?
And I think that would be my ongoing struggle because I'm teaching virtually and I'm doing the show virtually every week. And I do premarital counseling and I've done a couple of sessions online. And the information can be given. I feel that the information transfers well, but I think the piece that you've touched on, a lot of us touch on, is that there's something about that human energy of two people in a room together that you cannot transfer online. And that would be, to me, the only real downside is that there's something about that sense of someone's nurturing energy, because so much of what is healing is the modeling. And we talked about Carl Rogers a little bit because he started the whole idea of the humanist work, is that he created that safe space that just his presence in the room, like a kindly grandfather or, you know, a comforting minister, it just, that space of being that person's presence can open people up. And I think that might continue to be a challenge, but given our situation right now with the pandemic and needing to do this, in lieu of any other opportunities to provide care, this is a great start.
It is a great start. And I think we'll probably look to get more testing and research, you know, about it, which will tell us, you know, how we're doing. I mean, I would almost postulate that, and we saw this, you know, prior to the pandemic, we had obviously a big base of existing clients that were getting services through us. Mm-hmm. You know, with the pandemic and sort of the closing of our clinics and in-person therapy, we moved to teletherapy. We restored that existing base by 80%, you know, and they've held on, right? Which mm-hmm. means they had the rapport. So if you had an in-person experience where that rapport, that presence was felt, that trust, that, you know, that therapeutic alliance, you know, was authentic and real, it's much easier for it to now translate over the technological means, or agreed. At least I'm postulating that.
No, I agree.
It probably is, because it's already been ingrained, entrained into your nervous system and your body, right? Into your perceptions and perspectives. So we may see that, you know, there's new best practices for telehealth are find a way to do a low impact in-person intake or first session, and then transition to your teletherapy to keep that intact to some degree. Now I may be getting out there a bit, but
we have to be thinking hybrids as we move forward. My guest today is James Stotler. He's the executive director of Community Counseling Center in San Luis Obispo County. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And although we're not opening the phone lines, you can share a comment or question for James or myself by giving us a call at 805-549-8855. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about how do you best find a therapist to deal with the issues that you are grappling with today. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Take time to give thanks, make time to be given. I'm gonna stop and think twice about the way that I'm living. Did I say a kind word? Am I proud of my action? You know, a job well done satisfaction. Can I earn your trust, your love and affection? Just one step at a time in the right direction. I'm gonna aim for the sky, keep my feet on the ground. Raise my voice to the heavens, make a joyful sound. Sounds funny, but it's how my time's spent. Greet every day with full purpose, with passion and pride. I'm gonna follow my heart, have nothing
I'm
to
Elizabeth
hide.
Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist, and our number is 805-549-8855 if you have a comment or question to share with me or James. And my guest, James Stotler, is the Executive Director of Community Counseling Center. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, James, we have seen a huge increase in people who are struggling with their mental health, and people who've never really had issues with their mental health before are looking for some sort of support or therapy or counseling or guidance. So quick, can you let people know how they can contact CCC or Community Counseling Center to get started?
I would love to. Absolutely. For over 52 years, we've been, you know, a leading provider on the Central Coast of affordable professional psychotherapy for folks that are, you know, low to moderate income, uninsured or underinsured, which can include a very broad populace these days. Mm-hmm. So if you are looking for these resources, or you just want to talk with one of our staff about other referrals or what we might recommend for the types of needs that you have, go ahead and give our main office a call. We're open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. with a live voice on the phone. Our phone number is 805-543-7969. You can set up an intake assessment appointment quite easily, usually within 48 hours of your phone call. We are primarily doing telehealth, teletherapy right now, but we do have some openings for in-person, low-density, safe, socially distanced intakes if need be. If you don't have the technology, we've got to work with you. And I'd also invite you to go to the website, cccslow.org. You can read all about our different programs, our sliding scale program, our Medi-Cal CenCal option, as well as our groundbreaking virtual mindfulness for resilience group, which is going on. If you tuned in last week, you might have heard Dr. John Elfers talking about that. So some great resources there if you call our office, 805-543-7969.
And I would imagine that sitting with Dr. John Elfers for a mindfulness support group on Thursday nights would be lovely, because he is the quintessential kindly voice, the kindly, I don't say grandpa because maybe I was feeling sorry, but he has that kind of Mr. Rogers meets Carl Rogers essence about him.
That's such a good point. He does, right? He's got that approachability, that warmth, and can I say the dulcet tones?
Oh, yes, I like that. Nice use of the term. And so the nice thing about the telehealth is, I would assume if you live in Monterey to Ventura, because it's telemental health, this is not limited to San Luis County residents, right?
It isn't. And that's part of seeing these opportunities out of the new challenges, right? We can actually reach a broader, or we can actually span a larger geographical area with our services. So if you are in Santa Barbara County or Monterey County or Ventura County, we actually are here in a new way to be able to provide individual psychotherapy for you, or you could tap into that virtual group that's going on.
And so let's talk about, again, for people who have been seeking help, psychotherapy in the past, but for people who are now thinking, I need help. I'm overwhelmed. Things aren't good. You know, ideally the best time to look for a therapist, and it's not something we generally talk about, but the best time to look for a therapist is before you're in crisis. Wouldn't you agree that when we're in crisis, it's a terrible time to look for help, because you tend to then jump into a relationship with anyone who has letters behind their name because you're feeling desperate. And so ideally, and I know that doesn't help a lot of people, but if you can do the work to create a relationship with a psychotherapist before you're in a crisis situation, they can get to know you at your net neutral. Like, they can get to know you when you're functioning well, when life is going okay. And so when you do need them, and at some point we all need someone to turn to talk to sort things out with, they have a good sense of where you're trying to get back to, at least, or to move towards. So that's a side note, that you should be looking for a good clinician, just like you look for a good pediatrician for your kids, or an OBGYN, or a dentist. It should be right in there. But when we talk about clinicians, there's a lot of levels of clinical work. There are licensed clinical social workers, there's MFTs, there's psychologists, and there's psychiatrists. And they all do similar work around psychotherapy, but the training for someone who does LCSW clinical social work, or an MFT, or a licensed professional counselor, is much more relational centric. That this group of clinicians are really trained to work in relationship issues, situational changes, grief, loss, change of job, dealing with the stress and anxiety of the pandemic. You know, all of those areas are really well suited to the LPCCs and the MFTs and the LCSWs. Not to say you can't go to a psychologist, because they also have this psychotherapy training. But you're going to see, when you go up the ladder to the psychologist, or to especially psychiatrists, who are the only ones outside of the primary care physician who can write a prescription, you're going to see much more focus on assessment, more of a medical model diagnosis. Again, that's where you start getting, from my perspective, more of an anvil approach to things that could really be dealt with a good nurturing experience with a clinician who lets you just be. What are your thoughts about that, James?
Well, yeah, I mean, in this day and age, if you're somebody that wants to grow, or, you know, wants to heal, or just is thinking about overall wellness, you could be thinking about finding yourself your counselor or your psychotherapist before you are in that crisis. I like that mindset a lot. And I think it puts you in a much better position to be resilient through those times or that crisis when it comes, right? Mm-hmm. So, start doing some homework on that, right? What is it that you might want to work on? You know, are you in a transition or a phase of life? Have you had, as you said, periodic or episodic, you know, bouts of anxiety or depression? Or, you know, are you dealing with a job loss or grief or a trauma or anything of that nature? So there's a lot of different ways to do that. Probably, unfortunately, one of the worst ways to do it would be to call your insurance company and ask them to give you a list of people on their, you know, provider list, right, or approved list. Most of them might be full, and they aren't going to really tailor probably your needs to that clinician's skill set and personality and demeanor. So you're going to have to do a little research. Psychology Today is one, you know, clearinghouse to do some of that. You can go type in cities and look at an array of therapists and read about their personality. What do they say they like to work on? Mm-hmm. Get a sense of who they are in terms of professionally, personally, see what their modalities are, see what kind of clients they like to work with to make sure that you feel like you would fit into that, you know, particular bucket. Go ahead.
Well, I just think it's also important because most of us, I would hope most clinicians will do a phone consult too, to kind of get a sense when you hear their voice or, you know, when we're back in person, that you can meet them and get a sense if there is this fit, because it's like online dating. Someone's profile right. might look fantastic. And then yes. the first 30 seconds that you're in their presence, you realize this is a no-go. And it's kind of the same with psychotherapists, is that you kind of know pretty quickly if the person sitting across from you is a good fit. And we really need to empower people who are seeking help to be able to say, I don't think this is a fit for me. It's not going to hurt your clinician's feeling or that therapist's feelings, or that shouldn't hurt their feelings if they're really a professional, because they should care as much as you about the quality of that relationship. So when you go and have that first appointment or you have that phone consult, if you're not feeling it, then that's not your person. And I think that's important, because that trust you have that this person gets you is the key to healing.
I completely am on board with what you just said. Yes, and that's sort of the next step. Do what you can to profile, but when you take that next step to sort of do the matchmaking, is this the best fit? Is it a good fit? That's a time to start being in touch with your intuition mm-hmm. and your gut and your sense of, I'm letting somebody into my interior world of healing. Does it feel like they have the personal development and skills to handle me? That's so key. And that's the first step to doing this work. So let's make sure everybody is empowered and feels assertive about making those choices for themselves.
And I know that it can feel overwhelming, because I know we got a call last week after the show. There was a mom who had lost her job and was homeless with her children and was feeling like we weren't being serious enough about how much help people need. And I want to say that there is help. We have more resources, especially in this county, than you would believe. And CCC is one sure. of those, because I think, you know, people assume that if it's a counseling service, it's going to cost a lot of money. Or if it's a counseling service, I don't really need counseling. I need, you know, a place for my kids to sleep. But as a community counseling center, you're also a community resource as well, right?
Oh, completely. I mean, we field so many calls, right? Thousands a year. And some of them end up in counseling with us. Some of them end up just needing an ear to listen to and realize that they need a referral to a higher level of care or to a private therapist that takes the insurance that they do. So being a referral nexus, sort of an entry point to, you know, sift through what can be a cluttered and broken system at times, is something we do a lot of. So I would encourage people who may not know where to start to give us a call and see if we can just give you consultation about where you should begin. If we aren't the best fit, as you mentioned, we've got a hospice of San Luis Obispo County. We've got Stand Strong. We've got RISE. We've got Transitions Mental Health Association. We've got the Center for Family Strengthening. I could go down the list, but mm-hmm. we are resource rich. And yes. some of that role is to make sure it's distributed out and not duplicated.
Yes. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is James Statler, and he is the executive director with Community Counseling Center. He's been there almost 10 years. And what inspired the show this week is my concern, and this is kind of my thesis, is that Psychotherapy, done well, can be incredibly liberating. It can liberate us from pain and struggles and suffering and help us to move into a place of full functioning where most of us can reside, and at different levels in our lives, we're at different, you know, rates of functioning. But with the right guidance and help, we can really reclaim that space. But with the kind of mental health services that are an anvil, that are too much, that are treating a normal response to an abnormal situation, such as the pandemic, with over-medicating or over-prescribing or over-pathologizing what you're experiencing, it can send you down a path that can really be debilitating. And so it is on us as individuals and citizens to take responsibility for the care that we're seeking out and to not accept care that doesn't feel like it's meeting us where we are. And in this period of time, it would be normal for you to feel stress or anxiety or depression. It would be normal for you to feel like, you know, I used to be able to handle things that came my way, but I'm just not being able to keep up right now. I get that. This is what we call stress pileup. You can take so many things, so many stressors, and then you hit the end and you have no more capacity to keep bouncing back. And that's a great time to seek out psychotherapy, because it's not you that is sick. It is the system that we're in right now that is incredibly unhealthy. And you're trying to take your healthy coping mechanisms and they're just not cutting it. But you don't necessarily need medications or a pathological diagnosis. You need to recognize that you are experiencing a normal response to the abnormality of everything going on right now in the world. And to reach out and be really discerning in who you go to is key. So, James, when someone comes to Community Counseling Center, and you have how many clinicians right now that are volunteering?
We have nearly 70 active clinicians right now that cover the service area. So as you mentioned, that's marriage family therapists, clinical social workers, clinical psychologists, and professional clinical counselors. Most of them are of the MFT brand, but we have a nice smattering of all of those different disciplines. And we have licensed therapists as well as pre-licensed therapists in training. I would give a plug to our premier training program. It is wonderful that we can place master's and doctoral level trainees and interns with our agency.
And when you look at, you know, you said the MFT flavor, because that's my background as marriage and family therapist, but the LPCCs, the licensed professional counselors, we're all kind of in that relational world. But even within our licensure, our education and training is more specialized than people would think. So Someone else might have an MFT or a licensed marriage and family therapist, same letters that I do, but a very different lens and perspective of how they're going to do the work based on their training, based on their lens through what they see in the world. So that's also important, that if you decide, I really want to see an MFT, I want to deal in my relationships, I want to deal with my individual growth, I want to deal with my kids, that actual MFT also has to be someone that you can relate to and align with.
That's true, right? Again, kind of knowing that there's a nuance with each of those disciplines, and that your MFTs are all going to have different approaches. For Community Counseling Center, you know, our middle of the lane has always been like a solution-focused cognitive behavioral brand of therapy. This idea that you know, we can provide time-limited access, usually 10 to 15 sessions as a starter kit, to really kind of get you on your road to healing and transformation, and then make a mutual decision about whether you need to go on from there, but not the idea that it has to be long-term, right? We, as you talked about, we don't want to foster codependency if we don't need to. In fact, it's really healthy to be able to have that healing and that support and go back out and live and then reconnect. So that's just part of the middle lane. Now, there's also the exceptions and the fact that we have a big clinical team, so it's very eclectic. So, of course, trauma-informed care is so embedded in all the work that's being done, psychodynamic work, mindfulness-based work, relational, humanistic, is all within that, you know, kind of pantheon of what Community Counseling Center is all about. But again, that's part of your homework in feeling out your clinician. Where are their modalities? What kind of things are they going to be digging in with? Because you need to be ready for that and ready to work.
And that's true. It's important to remember that psychotherapy is not passive. When you mm-hmm. come in as a client, you are saying, I will actively engage in this process. It's not just me coming to talk and the therapist telling me what to do. Therapists aren't about giving advice. If they are, that's not the therapist. That's not a therapist. If you right. are paying someone who's giving you advice or telling you what you think you should do or telling you how to live your life, that is not a therapist. You need to walk away. That's, you know, an intrusive aunt who thinks she knows right. what's best for you. But in true psychotherapy, you know, the clinician is really a mirror and they are reflecting back to you what you're telling them, what you feel, so that you can experience your own world and then make decisions. That's the true essence of good talk therapy. So that's important to understand that you can't come in passively and say, fix me or heal me, that you have to be willing to do the work. So it's so important to read up on the different modalities like solution focus or psychodynamic or EMDR or, you know, to, right. to have an idea of what some of these treatments are before you go in. You can't just go in and lay yourself open and say, make me better, because it will not work and you'll end up being sorely disappointed. In our last few minutes, James, I want to shift a little bit because it came up with Dr. Alfers last week that I feel this strong need to rename or rebrand mental health or mental health care from something that's more dynamic. About, you know, more of, and I'm not sure what it is yet, but I think if we talked about mental health as a way of actually supporting people's already inherent wellness and building on those skills, instead of implying that when you're broken and weak, come in and we'll patch you back together. Because real good mental health care draws on everyone's inherent resilience and strengths. And maybe if we told people that up front, it's like, hey, you're never broken. You just haven't found out which skills you already have that you need to tap into. Like, how would we rename that so people would get more excited about the process?
Oh, gosh. I mean, the thing that comes to mind for me is, you know, kind of getting into the nuts and bolts of, I think, boosting our psychological vibrancy, right? I think, and getting into, actually, you know what comes to mind? Vitality, psychological vitality, because there's a great research, you know, that's been done around co-vitality, right? We talk about comorbidity as this compounding of ailments, psychopathologies, but if the idea was that it was really a co-vital building process, we would come in with a much different idea about our potential for post-traumatic growth, right? Or the anti-fragility that we can experience through trauma or through challenge. That's the beauty of where we're at. And it's a calling, though, for personal creativity, of course, and honesty and connectivity with our communities to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it came up last week, this idea of post-traumatic growth, that, you know, when we experience trauma, our first thought is that we're now broken and we'll never be the same. But that's really the opening of opportunity to experience yourself in a whole new light. And I love the idea of psychological vitality, because yes. I can imagine people being much more excited to call up community counseling center and say, I need to access my psychological vitality because life is really hard right now.
Yeah. I like the sound of that. That could be the new recipe for sure. And yeah, let's be honest. I mean, I think some of the data I saw said that depression rates have tripled among adults, mm-hmm. most, you know, here with COVID. And you know, Carl Jung said that even a happy life cannot be without a measure of darkness. And the word happy would lose its meaning if it were not balanced by sadness. So we do have to learn how to hold those two places and realize that the darkness is just the beginning of the light, right? It's just the tool set to find vitality in that space. That's a big invitation, I know. It puts our egos in check. It can be grounding and humbling. But certainly the potential is there. And we know that connecting, right? Because we have had social isolation become rampant, we know that the social brain of a lot of people is suffering and depression is setting in, and, you know, things around immunity and their well-being are not intact. And, you know, whether it be a technological connection or an in-person one, these are things that rejoin us to source living.
I love that you said that, source living, because the depression that people are starting to settle into, as you talked about, I just want to keep reiterating, it's not because you're sick or broken or biologically now diseased. It is a expected reaction to a depressed environment that we're living in. It's oppressive with the fires and the pandemic and whatever's happening politically or economically. So if you're feeling burdened down, this is a great time to reach out for new vitality. Because when we've used all our coping skills, I did 50 yoga classes, I went for 500 hikes, right? I did 70 Zoom wine afternoons, and none of it's working anymore. And that's when you call someone or you reach out to Community Counseling Center at 543-7969, 805-543-7969, and say, I am lacking vitality and I need to find new motivation. James Sadler, thank you. Thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it. I hope we can do this again sooner than 2 years.
Always stirring. No, bring me back whenever. 3 months, 6 months, you've got me.
Community Counseling Center is lucky to have you going into your 10th year. People can find you at cccslow.org and again at 805-543-7969. I want to thank everyone for tuning in and supporting the show. You can find me at Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Join me on Facebook. You can send me a message or send me a message through Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast the show and share it with friends. Thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Foghorn whistle blows to hear it. Don't want to have to fear it. Oh, and I just want to rock your gypsy soul, just like way back in the days of old. And together we will fall into the blessed. Come on, y'all. Well, hear me say,
thanks for tuning in for this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. This show will be available to listen to later today on our website at kcbx.org. You can hear any of our local shows anytime and stream on demand from our website at kcbx.org. Connect with us on social media. We're at kcbxfm.
So foghorn whistle blows. Got to hear it. Don't want to have to fear it. Oh, and I just want to rock the gypsy soul. Just like way back in the days of old.